to the birth mother in an urban environment either. From the child's perspective, nurturing is nurturing no matter which loving, security-inducing caregiver it comes from. Nicole was able to negotiate a more flexible schedule at work so that her son could attend preschool half days, along with his friend who lived next door, and the two mothers covered for each other. Ideal mommy brain environment. One environmental factor that is essential for good mothering in any animal is predictability. It's not about how many resources are available. It's about how regularly they can be obtained. In one study, mother rhesus monkeys were set up with their youngsters in three different environments. One had plenty of food every day, one had scarce food every day, and the third had plenty of food on some days, but scarce food on others. The amount of nurturing behavior mothers gave to their youngsters in these environments was recorded every hour on video. Youngsters in the best environment with plenty of food got the most responsive nurturing from their moms, while those in the environments with scarce but steady amounts of food got almost as much. But those from the unpredictable environment not only got the least amount of nurturing, but received abusive and aggressive attacks from their moms. The mother and infant monkeys in the unpredictable environment had higher levels of stress hormones and lower levels of oxytocin than their peers in the other environments. In an unpredictable human environment, mothers become fearful and timid, and babies show signs of depression. The youngsters cling to their moms and are much less interested in exploring and playing with others, traits that linger on into adolescence and adulthood. This study supports the common sense notion that mothers can do their best in a predictable environment. According to the primatologist Sarah Hurdy, humans evolved as cooperative breeders in settings where mothers have always relied on allo-maternal care from others. So whatever a mother does and others do to help her, inside or outside the home, to ensure the predictability and availability of resources, financial, emotional, and social, may ultimately secure her children's future well-being. Living for two. I can remember how stunned I was to discover that my independent and self-sufficient lifestyle no longer worked after I had my child. My thinking had always been that I could organize it myself and do most of the mothering alone. Boy, was I wrong. Since a mother's brain has virtually expanded its definition of the self to include her child, the needs of the child will become a biological imperative for the mother, perhaps more compelling to her brain than her own needs. I could no longer schedule my life so neatly. I didn't know how much help from others besides my husband's I would need. Every new mother needs to understand the biological changes that are going to happen in her brain and then plan out her pregnancy and mothering dynamic in advance. This life challenge can stimulate your brain circuits to grow like no other. Setting up a predictable environment for work and for loving, security-inducing childcare will be crucial. A mother's emotional and mental development depends to a great extent on the context in which she mothers. Knowing that you will need extra support for yourself and some good allo mothers for your child will be key to your success as a mother. If we can provide a reliable, secure environment for the mommy brain, we can stop the domino effect of stressed mothers and insecure, stressed children. The changes that happen in the mommy brain are the most profound and permanent of a woman's life. For as long as her child is living under her roof, her GPS system of brain circuits will be dedicated to tracking that beloved child. Long after the grown baby leaves the nest, the tracking device continues to work. Perhaps this is why so many mothers experience intense grief and panic when they lose day-to-day contact with the person their brain cells tell them is an extension of their own reality. Developmental psychologists believe that the female brain's extreme ability to connect through reading faces, interpreting tones of voice, and registering the nuances of emotion are traits that were selected evolutionarily from the time of the Stone Age. These traits make it possible for the female brain to pick up cues from nonverbal infants and anticipate their needs. The female brain will turn this extraordinary ability on all her relationships. If she's married or partnered with a male brain, each will inhabit two different emotional realities. The more both know about the differences in the emotional realities of the male and female brains, the more hope we have of turning those partnerships into satisfying and supportive relationships and families. Just what the mommy brain needs to be at its best. Chapter 6. Emotion. The Feeling Brain. Is there any truth to the cultural stereotype that women are more emotionally sensitive than men? Or that a man wouldn't know an emotion unless it hit him on the head? My husband said we didn't need a separate chapter on emotions. I didn't see how I could write this book without one. The explanation of our different mindsets lies in the biology of our brains. My patient Sarah was positive that her husband Nick was seeing another woman. Over several days, she silently chewed on the idea. First, she felt unsure of what she suspected. Then, as her mind worked over her anger at the possibility that he was cheating, her gut sense of betrayal became overwhelming. She stopped smiling. How could he do this to her and their baby daughter? She moped around the house. She couldn't understand why her husband never tried to cheer her up. Couldn't he see how miserable she was? Nick had always been larger than life to her, so talented and smart. Sarah felt honored to be his wife. When he turned his beam of brilliance on her to tell her his deepest thoughts, she felt she was eliciting greatness from him. She lived for the moments he shined on her. But when it came to an emotional interaction, it was a different story. He was a little hard to reach. So one night, when she burst into tears over dinner, Nick was stunned. Sarah couldn't figure out why he was so surprised. She'd been showing a cold face to him for days. She went back over all those moments when he shined on her with such intensity and how wonderful this always made her feel, that he really loved her and cared about her. Was she wrong about that? Or didn't she please him anymore? How could he be so insensitive to her emotional state? Imagine for a moment that we had an MRI scanner. This is what it might look like inside Sarah's brain and body as she processed her conversation with Nick. As she asks him if he is seeing someone else, her visual system begins scanning Nick's face intently for signs of his emotional response to her question. Does he tighten his face or relax it? Does he clench around the mouth or keep it neutral? Whatever the expression on his face, her eyes and facial muscles will automatically mimic it. The rate and depth of her breathing start to match his. Her posture and muscle tension conform to his. Her body and brain receive his emotional signals. This information is sent through her brain circuits to search her emotional memory banks for a match. This process is called mirroring, and not all people can do it equally well. Although most of the studies on this topic have been done on primates, scientists speculate that there may be more mirror neurons in the human female brain than in the human male brain. Sarah's brain will begin stimulating its own circuits as if her husband's body sensations and emotions were hers. In this way, she can identify and anticipate what he is feeling, often before he is conscious of it himself. Matching breathing, matching posture, she is becoming a human emotion detector. She is feeling his tension in her gut, his jaw clenching in the strain of her neck. Her brain registers the emotional match, anxiety, fear, and controlled panic. As he starts to speak, her brain carefully searches to see if what he says is congruent with his tone of voice. If the tone and meaning do not match, her brain will activate wildly. Her cortex, the place for analytical thinking, would try to make sense of this mismatch. She detects a subtle incongruence in his tone of voice. It is a little too over the top for his protestations of innocence and devotion. His eyes are darting a bit too much for her to believe what he is saying. The meaning of his words, the tone of his voice, and the expression in his eyes do not match. She knows he is lying. She is now using her brain's entire emotion network as well as her cognitive and emotional suppression circuits to keep from crying. But the dam breaks. Tears roll down her cheeks. Nick's face looks puzzled. He has not been following Sarah's emotional nuances, otherwise he would have known she was losing it. Sarah was right. When Nick came to see me as part of couples counseling, he revealed that he had been spending lots of time with a female co-worker. The relationship hadn't been consummated, but he had crossed the line in his flirtations and was becoming emotionally involved. Sarah knew it, literally, in every cell in her body, but since he hadn't technically cheated, Nick figured he was in the clear. When he realized that Sarah had correctly identified what he was feeling and thinking, he once again thought he was married to a psychic, but she was just doing what the female brain is expert at: reading faces, interpreting tone of voice, and assessing emotional nuance. Maneuvering like an F-15, Sarah's female brain is a high-performance emotion machine, geared to tracking, moment by moment, the nonverbal signals of the innermost feelings of others. By contrast, Nick, like most males, according to scientists, is not as adept at reading facial expressions and emotional nuance, especially signs of despair and distress. It's only when men actually see tears that they realize, viscerally, that something's wrong. Perhaps that's why women evolve to cry 4 times more easily than men, displaying an unmistakable sign of sadness and suffering that men can't ignore. Couples like Nick and Sarah come to see me all the time for counseling. She complains about his lack of emotional sensitivity because hers is so finely tuned, and he complains about the fact that she doesn't seem to realize he loves her. These are the different realities of the male and female brains at work. The biology of gut feelings. Women know things about the people around them. They feel a teenage child's distress, a husband's flickering thoughts about his career, a friend's happiness in achieving a goal, or a spouse's infidelity at a gut level. Gut feelings are not just free-floating emotional states, but actual physical sensations that convey meaning to certain areas in the brain. Some of this increased gut feeling may have to do with the number of cells available in a woman's brain to track body sensations. After puberty, they increase. The estrogen increase means that girls feel gut sensations and physical pain more than boys do. Some scientists speculate that this greater body sensation in women punches up the brain's ability to track and feel painful emotions, too, as they register in the body. The areas of the brain that track gut feelings are larger and more sensitive in the female brain, according to brain scan studies. Therefore, the relationship between a woman's gut feelings and her intuitive hunches is grounded in biology. When a woman begins receiving emotional data through butterflies in her stomach or a clench in the gut, as Sarah did when she finally asked Nick if he was seeing someone else, her body sends a message back to the insula and anterior cingulate cortex. The insula is an area in an old part of the brain where gut feelings are first processed. The anterior cingulate cortex, which is larger and more easily activated in females, is a critical area for anticipating, judging, controlling, and integrating negative emotions. A woman's pulse rate jumps, a knot forms in her stomach, and the brain interprets it as an intense emotion. Being able to guess what another person is thinking or feeling is essentially mind reading. And overall, the female brain is gifted at quickly assessing the thoughts, beliefs, and intentions of others based on the smallest hints. One morning at breakfast, my patient Jane looked up to see that her husband Evan was smiling. He held the newspaper, but his gaze was lifted and his eyes darted back and forth, though he wasn't looking at her. She had seen this behavior many times before in her lawyer husband and asked, "What are you thinking about? Who are you beating in court right now?" Evan responded, "I'm not thinking about anything." But in fact, he was unconsciously rehearsing an exchange with counsel he might be having later that day. He had a great argument, and he was looking forward to mopping up the courtroom with his opponent. Jane knew it before he did. Jane's observations were so minute that to Evan she appeared to be reading his mind. This often unnerved him. Jane had watched Evan's eyes and facial expression and correctly inferred what was going on in his brain. And later, when he seemed to display hesitancy, a slight pause before speaking, tightness in his mouth, a low and flat tone of voice, when talking about going into the office, she sensed that a big career shift was coming. She mentioned this, but Evan said he hadn't been thinking about anything like that. A few days later, he announced he wanted to leave his firm and become a judge. Jane's observations were being made subconsciously, so these thoughts didn't register as anything but gut feelings. Men don't seem to have the same innate ability to read faces and tone of voice for emotional nuance. This difference was in abundant display during the first few weeks after Jane and Evan met. She told me he was going way too fast for her, but he was unaware of her discomfort. A female friend of Evan's took one look at Jane, spotted her uneasiness, and warned Evan to back off. He didn't listen, and the results were nearly disastrous. In that moment, Evan's female friend established emotional congruence with Jane, something that women seem to do naturally and that has been found to be crucial for successful psychotherapy. A study at California State University, Sacramento, of psychotherapists' success with their clients showed that therapists who got the best results had the most emotional congruence with their patients at meaningful junctures in the therapy. These mirroring behaviors showed up simultaneously as the therapist comfortably settled into the climate of the client's worlds by establishing good rapport. All of the therapists who showed these responses happened to be women. Girls are years ahead of boys in their ability to judge how they might avoid hurting someone else's feelings or how a character in a story might be feeling. This ability might be the result of the mirror neurons firing away, allowing girls not only to observe, but also to imitate or mirror the hand gestures, body postures, breathing rates, gazes, and facial expressions of other people as a way of intuiting what they are feeling. The cat is out of the bag now. This is the secret of intuition, the bottom line of a woman's ability to mind read. Nothing mystical at all. In fact, brain imaging studies show that the mere act of observing or imagining another person in a particular emotional state can automatically activate similar brain patterns in the observer. And females are especially good at this kind of emotional mirroring. Through this kind of approximation, Jane figured out how Evan felt because she could feel through her body's sensations. Sometimes other people's feelings can overwhelm a woman. My patient Roxy, for example, gasped every time she saw a loved one hurt him or herself, even when they did something as minor as stub a toe, as if she were feeling their pain. Her mirror neurons were overreacting, but she was demonstrating an extreme form of what the female brain does naturally from childhood and even more in adulthood, experience the pain of another person. At the Institute of Neurology at University College London, researchers placed women in an MRI machine while they delivered brief electric shocks, some weak and some strong, to their hands. Next, the hands of the women's romantic partners were hooked up for the same treatment. The women were signaled as to whether the electric shock to their beloved's hands were weak or strong. The female subjects couldn't see their lovers' faces or bodies, but even so, the same pain areas of their brains that had activated when they themselves were shocked lit up when they learned their partners were being strongly shocked. The women were feeling their partner's pain. Like walking in another's brain, not just his shoes. Researchers have been unable to elicit similar brain responses from men. Many evolutionary psychologists have speculated that this ability to feel another's pain and quickly read emotional nuance gave Stone Age women a heads up to sense potential dangerous or aggressive behavior and thus avoid the consequences to themselves and protect their children. This talent also primes women for anticipating the physical needs of nonverbal infants. Being this emotionally sensitive has its pros and cons. Jane, a normally brash and courageous person, told me that she could not get to sleep for hours after seeing an intense action flick. In a study on the after effects of frightening films, women were more likely to lose sleep than men. Studies show that, from childhood, females startle more easily and react more fearfully as measured through electrical conductivity in the skin. Evan had to readjust his movie-watching habits if he wanted to include Jane. So when he suggested that they watch The Godfather, he made sure it was in the middle of the day. Getting through to the male brain. In the male brain, most emotions trigger less gut sensation and more rational thought. The typical male brain reaction to an emotion is to avoid it at all costs. To get a male brain's emotional attention, a woman needs to do the equivalent of yelling, "Periscope up! Emotion coming! All hands on deck!" It took a lot for Jane to get the message to Evan that he was moving too fast when they met. Jane explained to me that she had been burned in relationships before and was seriously gun-shy when she started dating Evan. He paid no attention to the signals she was sending that she was a bona fide commitment phobe. On the third date, he told her he thought she was the one. By the second week, he wanted them to move in together and plan for the future. When Jane came in for her session that week, she looked as scared as a deer caught in headlights. Then, over pizza during the third week, Evan let her know he wanted to get married and start a family, and he was sure she was the one he wanted to do it with. Jane promptly turned green and ran to the bathroom. It wasn't until she showed obvious signs of distress that Evan realized he was moving too fast. He hadn't heeded the earlier warning from his female friend, and now he was in deep trouble. Bursting into tears often grabs the male brain's attention, but the tears nearly always come as a complete surprise and extreme discomfort to a man. A woman, because of her expert ability to read faces, will recognize the pursed lips, the squeezing around the eyes and the quivering corners of the mouth as preludes to crying. A man will not have seen this buildup, so his response is usually, "Why are you crying? Please don't make such a big deal out of nothing. Being upset is a waste of time." Researchers conclude that this typical scenario means that the male brain must go through a longer process to interpret emotional meaning. Most men just don't want to take the time to figure out the emotion, and they become impatient because it takes longer for them. Simon Baron-Cohen at the University of Cambridge believes this is what happens in men with the extreme male brain that is characteristic of Asperger's disorder. These men become unable to look at a face, let alone read it. The amount of emotional input from another person's face registers on their brains as unbearable pain. Tears in a woman may evoke brain pain in men. The male brain registers helplessness in the face of pain, and such a moment can be extremely difficult for them to tolerate. The first time Jane cried in front of an otherwise very affectionate Evan, she was stunned that she got a perfunctory hug and a few pats on the back, followed by, "Okay, that's enough." This seemingly rejecting behavior became a bone of contention in their relationship. The two came to see me for an urgent couple session. Evan needed to communicate to Jane that seeing her cry was nearly impossible for him to bear, because when he saw her in pain, he felt powerless to do anything about it. Slowly, they began to work on a compromise so that Jane could get the comfort she needed and Evan could ease the pain he experienced. When Jane was upset, Evan would sit on the couch with a box of Kleenex on his lap. He would cradle her with one arm and hold a magazine or book with the other in order to distract himself from his own discomfort. After a few years, Evan was able to recognize when Jane needed a good cry, and soon he could simply hold her and take care of her until she was done. When he doesn't respond the way she wants him to. Being able to be there during emotionally difficult times is hardwired into women, which is why they are often baffled by their husbands' inability to sit with sadness or despair. One study showed that newborn girls, less than 24 hours old, respond more to cries of another baby and to human faces than do boys. Girls as young as a year old are more responsive to the distress of other people, especially those who look sad or are hurt. Men pick up the subtle signs of sadness in a female face only 40% of the time, whereas women can pick up these signs 90% of the time. And while men and women are both comfortable being physically close to a happy person, only women report that they feel equally comfortable being close to someone sad. Think of your girlfriends who will stick with you when you are hurt or sad. They'll ask you when it happened, what was said, if you've been able to sleep or eat, and do you need me to come over? To them, the details are important. I remember when I broke my ankle a few years ago and my girlfriends would just stop by and bring me some little treat they knew I'd like. They did everything they could to keep me from getting cabin fever. They knew how to help. Guy friends, by contrast, offered a quick, "I hope you feel better," before jumping off the phone or walking out the door. It's not that they were being insensitive on purpose. It may be more about ancient wiring. Men are used to avoiding contact with others when they themselves are going through an emotionally rough time. They process their troubles alone and think women would want to do the same. Periscope down, submarine dives 20 fathoms to solve it alone. The same apparent insensitivity can show up during other emotional exchanges. Jane and Evan moved in together, and after a few pressure-free months, Jane realized she wanted to spend the rest of her life with Evan, too. She decided to let him know. After 2 months of her dropping hints about kids, about buying a house together, about what city they'd finally settle in, Evan didn't do anything. At our next session, Jane reported to me that, panicked, she went for the direct route. "I'm ready to get married," she told him one afternoon. Evan replied, "Okay, that's good to know," then went to watch the basketball playoffs. Jane began to panic. Had he changed his mind? Did he not love her anymore? She chased him around the house for 3 hours, haranguing him. Out of utter frustration and humiliation, she burst into tears, asking him if he was thinking of leaving her. "What?" Evan exclaimed. "How did you come to that conclusion? This is the first time you've given me any indication that you're ready. I was going to buy a ring and make a nice romantic dinner plan, but I can see you're not going to let me do that. So, okay, will you marry me?" Jane couldn't understand how he had missed the signs that she was ready. And Evan couldn't understand why she was so upset that he didn't answer right away. Remember the little girl who wouldn't rest until she got an expression out of a mime? If she doesn't get the expected response, she will persist until she begins to conclude that she's done something wrong or that the person doesn't like or love her anymore. Something similar was playing out for Jane. When Evan didn't immediately ask her to marry him and didn't respond to her direct approach, she concluded that he didn't love her anymore. Evan, in fact, was just trying to buy time to do things right. Emotional memory. It would be interesting to follow Evan and Jane over the years and see how they remember these early days. Most likely his version, through no fault of his own, will be the movie trailer. Hers will be the full-length motion picture. She will take this as a sign of his waning love. When she expresses this reaction to him, he won't know what she's talking about. To understand their differences, we have to look at how emotions get stored as memories in the female brain. Picture for a moment a map showing the areas for emotion in the brains of the two sexes. In the man's brain, the connecting routes between areas would be country roads. In the woman's brain, they'd be superhighways. According to researchers at the University of Michigan, women use both sides of the brain to respond to emotional experiences, while men use just one side. They found the connections between the emotion centers are also more active and extensive in women. In another study at Stanford University, volunteers viewed emotional images while having their brains scanned. 9 different brain areas lit up in women, but only 2 lit up in men. Research also shows that women typically remember emotional events, such as first dates, vacations, and big arguments, more vividly and retain them longer than men. Women will know what he said, what they both ate, if it was cold outside or it rained on their anniversary, while men may forget everything except whether or not she looks sexy. For both sexes, the emotional gatekeeper is the amygdala, an almond-shaped structure located deep within the brain. The amygdala is like the brain's homeland security alerting and coordinating system, switching on the rest of the body systems, the gut, skin, heart, muscles, eyes, face, ears, and adrenal glands, to look out for incoming emotional stimuli. The first relay station for emotion from the amygdala to the body is the hypothalamus. Like the joint chiefs, it's responsible for coordinating the launch of systems that raise blood pressure, heart rate, and breathing rate, and stimulate the fight-or-flight reaction after receiving reports from the body. The amygdala also alerts the cortex, the brain's intelligence branch, which sizes up the emotional situation, analyzes it, and determines how much attention it deserves. If it senses enough emotional intensity, the cortex cues the amygdala to alert the conscious brain to pay attention. This is the moment when we're flooded with conscious emotional feeling. Before this point, all this brain processing is happening behind the scenes. The brain's decision-making center, or executive branch, the prefrontal cortex, can now decide how to respond. Part of the reason that her memory is better for emotional details is that a woman's amygdala is more easily activated by emotional nuance. The stronger the amygdala responds to a stressful situation, such as an accident or threat, or a pleasant event, such as a romantic dinner, the more details the hippocampus will tag for memory storage about the experience. Scientists believe that because women have a relatively larger hippocampus, they have better memories for the details of both pleasant and unpleasant emotional experiences. When they happened, who was there, what the weather was like, how the restaurant smelled, in a detailed three-dimensional sensory snapshot. 13 years later, Jane remembers every minute of the day she and Evan decided to get married. But as time wore on, Evan began to forget how it happened. They used to laugh about it all the time, but now he looks at her blankly when she recounts the details. He remembers that she got sick the first time he mentioned marriage, but he doesn't remember how he eventually asked her. He didn't store in memory any of these precious details. This is not because Evan doesn't love Jane. It's because his brain circuits are incapable of retaining the information, so it doesn't encode in his long-term memory. If she had activated his amygdala with a threat to the relationship or a physical danger, the memory would have been burned into his circuits just as it is into hers. There are two exceptions in which men register emotions and thus detailed memories. If the person he is interacting with is blatantly angry and threatening, a man will be able to read that emotion as quickly as a woman can. His response to an aggressive threat will be as quick as hers and will trigger an almost instant muscular reaction. Threatening to leave or threatening him physically will get his attention in an instant. Jane told me that, though she didn't mean it, she had told Evan during an argument that she couldn't take his stubbornness anymore and she was leaving. Evan was so traumatized that he asked her never to threaten to leave unless she really meant it. That was an argument he never forgot. The female brain's tough time with anger. Another major difference between the male and female brains is in how they process anger. Although men and women report feeling the same amount of anger, the expression of anger and aggression is clearly greater in men. The amygdala is the brain center for fear, anger, and aggression, and it's physically larger in men than in women, whereas the anger, fear, and aggression control center, the prefrontal cortex, is relatively larger in women. As a result, it's easier to push a man's anger button. The male amygdala also has many testosterone receptors, which stimulate and heighten its response to anger, especially after the testosterone surges at puberty. That's why men whose testosterone levels are high, which includes younger men, have short anger fuses. Many women who start taking testosterone also notice that their anger response is suddenly quicker. As men age, their testosterone naturally declines. The amygdala becomes less responsive, the prefrontal cortex gains more control, and they don't get angry as fast. Women have a much less direct relationship to anger. I grew up hearing from my mother that the quality and longevity of a marriage could be measured by the number of bite marks on a woman's tongue. When a woman bites her tongue to avoid expressing anger, it's not all socialization. A lot of it is brain circuitry. Even if a woman wanted to express her anger right away, often her brain circuits would attempt to hijack this response, to reflect on it first out of fear and anticipation of retaliation. Also, the female brain has a tremendous aversion to conflict, which is set up by fear of angering the other person and losing the relationship. This may be accompanied by a sudden change in some brain neurochemicals, such as serotonin, dopamine, and norepinephrine, causing an unbearable activation in the brain on almost the same spectrum as a seizure when anger or feelings of conflict arise in a relationship. Perhaps in response to this extreme discomfort, the female brain developed an additional step in processing and avoiding conflict and anger, a series of circuits that hijack the emotion and chew on it, the same way a cow has an extra stomach that re-chews its food before it is digested. These extra-large areas in the female brain are the prefrontal cortex and the anterior cingulate cortex. They are the female brain's version of the extra stomach for chewing on anger. As we saw earlier, women activate these areas more than men at the fear of loss or pain. In the wild, the loss of a relationship with a protective male provider could have spelled doom. Cautiously holding her anger back may also have saved a female and her offspring from retaliation from men. If she didn't fly off the handle, she was less likely to evoke an extreme response from a trigger-tempered male. Studies show that when a conflict or argument breaks out in a game, girls typically decide to stop playing to avoid any angry exchange, while boys generally continue to play intensely, jockeying for position, competing, and arguing hour after hour about who'll be the boss or who will get access to the coveted toy. If a woman is pushed over the edge by finding out that her husband is having an affair, or if her child is in danger, her anger will blast right through and she will go to the mat. Otherwise, she will avoid anger or confrontation the same way a man will avoid an emotion. Girls and women may not always feel the initial intense blast of anger directly from the amygdala that men feel. I can remember one time when a colleague did something unfair to me and I came home to tell my husband. He immediately became furious at the person and couldn't understand why I wasn't really mad. Instead of triggering a quick action response in the brain, as it does in males, anger in girls and women moves through the brain's gut feeling, conflict, pain, anticipation, and verbal circuits. I had to chew on the incident for a while before responding. Women talk to others first when they are angry at a third person. But scientists speculate that though a woman is slower to act out of anger, once her faster verbal circuits get going, they can cause her to unleash a barrage of angry words that a man can't match. Typical men speak fewer words and have less verbal fluency than women, so they may be handicapped in angry exchanges with women. Men's brain circuits and bodies may readily revert to a physical expression of anger fueled by the frustration of not being able to match women's words. Often when I see a couple who are not communicating well, the problem is that the man's brain circuits push him frequently and quickly to an angry, aggressive reaction, and the woman feels frightened and shuts down. Ancient wiring is telling her it's dangerous, but she anticipates that if she flees, she'll be losing her provider and may have to fend for herself. If a couple remains locked in this Stone Age conflict, there is no chance for resolution. Helping my patients understand that the emotion circuits for anger and safety are different in the male and female brains is often quite helpful. Anxiety and depression. Sarah came into the office one day shaking. She and Nick had been fighting over the woman he was flirting with in his office. Sarah was convinced Nick had flirted right in front of her that weekend at a dinner party. Whenever he cut off the discussion and left the room, a videotape seemed to lock Sarah's mind into watching the divorce, the division of assets, and the assignment of child custody, saying goodbye to his family and leaving town. She was having a hard time focusing. She was on alert for the next fight and was becoming sure that their marriage was collapsing. It wasn't true. Nick was making a big effort, but the arguing was leaving Sarah's brain in acute neurochemical distress. All her brain circuits were on red alert. Nick seemed unperturbed, playing his regular Wednesday night game of hoops. He didn't seem awkward around her at home, yet she was losing sleep, crying all day, and becoming increasingly hopeless. According to Sarah's reality, the world was coming to an end, but Nick seemed to be showing complete indifference. Why was Sarah feeling unsafe and afraid while Nick was not? Males and females have different emotional circuitry for safety and fear reinforced by our particular experiences in life. The feeling of safety is built into the brain's wiring, and scans show that girls' and women's brains activate more than men's in anticipation of fear or pain. According to research at Columbia, the brain learns about what is dangerous when its fear pathways are activated, and about what is safe when its pleasure reward circuits fire. Females find it harder than do males to suppress their fear in response to anticipation of danger or pain. This is why Sarah was freaking out at home alone. Anxiety is a state that occurs when stress or fear triggers the amygdala, causing the brain to rally all its conscious attention to the threat at hand. Anxiety is 4 times more common in women. A woman's highly responsive stress trigger allows her to become anxious much more quickly than does a man. Although this may not seem like an adaptive trait, it actually allows her brain to focus on the danger at hand and respond quickly to protect her children. Unfortunately, this intense sensitivity in adult women, as in teenage girls, means that they are nearly twice as likely as men to suffer from depression and anxiety, especially through their reproductive years. This troubling phenomenon exists across cultures, from Europe, North America, and Asia to the Middle East. While psychologists have emphasized cultural and social explanations for this depression gender gap, more and more neuroscientists are finding that sensitivity to fear, stress, genes, estrogen, progesterone, and innate brain biology play important roles. Many gene variations and brain circuits that are affected by estrogen and serotonin are thought to increase women's risk of depression. The CREB1 gene, which is different in some women diagnosed with depression, has a little switch that is turned on by estrogen. Scientists speculate that this may be one of several mechanisms by which women's vulnerability to depression turns on at puberty with the surges of progesterone and estrogen. Estrogen's effects may also explain why 3 times more women than men suffer from the winter blues, or seasonal affective disorder. Researchers know that estrogen affects the body's circadian rhythm, the sleep and wake cycle stimulated by daylight and darkness, triggering these wintertime blues in genetically vulnerable women. Every year, scientists are locating more gene variations related to depression that run in certain families. Another gene, called the serotonin transporter gene, or 5-HTT, also seems to trigger depression in females who inherit a particular version of it. Scientists speculate that this gene variation may contribute to making depression more common in women, because its switch is triggered by threats and severe stress. This may have been the situation in Sarah's case. She came from a family with a history of depression only in the female members. As I know from the many women who come to my clinic, it is often the severe stress caused by the loss of a relationship that pushes genetically vulnerable women over the edge into a clinical depression. Other hormonal events, pregnancy, postpartum depression, premenstrual syndrome, perimenopause, can also disrupt the female brain's emotional balance, and during a rough period, a woman may need chemical or hormonal rebalancing. Know the difference. As both men and women grow into middle and older ages, gain more life experience, and feel more secure, they often become more comfortable expressing a fuller range of emotions, including those, for men especially, that have long been suppressed. But there's no getting around the fact that women have different emotional perceptions, realities, responses, and memories than do men. And these differences, based on brain circuitry and function, are at the heart of many interesting misunderstandings. Evan and Jane came to see each other's realities. When she broke down crying out of the blue, he tried to figure out if he was being unresponsive in some way. When she was tired and didn't want to have sex, he fought his instincts and took her at her word. When he became irritable and possessive, she realized she hadn't been sexually attentive enough. And just as they had come to understand each other, it was all about to change. There was still one major shift to come in the female reality. Chapter 7, The Mature Female Brain. Sylvia woke up one day and decided, "This is it. I'm done. I want a divorce." It had become clear to her that her husband, Robert, was unavailable and ungiving. She was tired of listening to his tirades and fed up with his demands. But what really pushed her over the edge was when she found herself in the hospital for a week for an intestinal blockage and he visited her only twice. Both times he came to ask questions about running the house. At least this is how Sylvia, an attractive woman with brown hair, bright blue eyes, and a spring in her step, explained it to me during a therapy session. Since her early 20s, she felt she had spent most of her time taking care of needy, self-absorbed people. She had fixed their problems, pulling them out of alcoholism or abusive situations, and in return they had sucked her emotionally dry. At age 54, she was still very attractive and felt full of energy. What astounded her more than anything else was that she felt as though a haze had lifted recently, and she could see in a way she hadn't been able to before. The tugs she used to feel at her heartstrings to rescue and care for others had all but vanished. She was ready to take some risks and start walking in the direction of her dreams. "What is it about my life that isn't working?" she asked. "I want more out of my life than this." For years, she had cooked and cleaned and raised three children as a stay-at-home mother. Though she had yearned to work, Robert had made it impossible by denying her household help. For 28 years, she had chauffeured, nurtured, and loved their children, made sure homework was done, dinner was eaten, and the house didn't fall apart. Now, out of nowhere, she found herself asking why. Sylvia's story has become an all-too-familiar rite of passage. The menopausal woman chucking everything and everyone and starting over, especially now that 150,000 American women per month are entering this phase of life. It's a process that seems baffling to the premenopausal woman and has shocked more than a few husbands. A menopausal woman becomes less worried about pleasing others and now wants to please herself. This change has been looked at as a moment of psychological development, but is also likely triggered by a new biological reality based in the female brain as it makes its last big hormonal change of life. If we took our MRI scanner into Sylvia's brain, we'd see a landscape quite different from that of a few years before. A constancy in the flow of impulses through her brain circuits has replaced the surges and plunges of estrogen and progesterone caused by the menstrual cycle. Her brain is now a more certain and steady machine. We do not see the hair trigger circuits in the amygdala that rapidly altered her reality right before her period, sometimes pushing her to see bleakness that wasn't there or to hear an insult that wasn't intended. We would see that the brain circuits between the amygdala, the emotional processor, and the prefrontal cortex, the emotion assessment and judgment area, are fully functional and consistent. They are no longer easily overamped at certain times of the month. The amygdala still lights up more than a man's when Sylvia sees a threatening face or hears about a tragedy, but tears don't flood her so quickly anymore. 51.5 years is the average age of menopause, the moment 12 months after a woman's last period, 12 months after the ovaries have stopped producing the hormones that have boosted her communication circuits, emotion circuits, the drive to tend and care, and the urge to avoid conflict at all costs. The circuits are still there, but the fuel for running the highly responsive Maserati engine for tracking the emotions of others has begun to run dry, and this scarcity causes a major shift in how a woman perceives her reality.